That's brilliant. Thank you very much. It just strikes me as Karin was talking there about sort of groups that are perhaps more foregrounded and groups that are sometimes sort of hidden and things like that. Although we've sort of covered some of the five themes that the other podcast sort of looked at, there's scope to perhaps talk a little bit about other groups. I mean, Karin, you mentioned travelers and Roma, histories as well, but we haven't really talked about women. We haven't really talked about LGBTQ. And I just wondered again if perhaps Karin, if you could come in with talking a little bit about perhaps the place of women in the primary curriculum, and then maybe subsequently also thinking about the LGBT dimension in relation to other types of histories we could include in the primary curriculum and how.
Well, I think anybody that knows my writing in primary history will know that I almost always have women. I find women's history fascinating myself. I think that it's important to try to have a balance of the different individuals that we encounter along the way. So that if we are looking at the Anglo-Saxon or post-Roman period, we include people like Æthelflæd, or we look at Hilda of Whitby or Saint Bertha or Winfled as a powerful widow living at the end of that period, and her will gives us all this information about what life was like to a certain extent through her belongings and what she bequeathed to her family, is an exciting exploration that you could do with children there. So making sure that when we are looking at the materials that we're using and the stories that we're telling, that we try to achieve a balance between male and female. I recently looked at a textbook that you find in a lot of classrooms. I will not name it, but I was looking at it, and I counted all the images in it, and there were 24 images of men by themselves, 12 images of men and women together, and one image of a woman by herself. So, what does that suggest to children in relation to the importance of women? If we don't bring them to the foreground, if we don't find some of those stories and tell those stories along the way, the impression that we give is that all women did was look after children somewhere, and that they did nothing else, and that they have no history because they didn't really do anything. They weren't really important. So we actually really need to seek to strengthen the stories that we tell about women. The one woman they did have, it was Æthelflæd. It was a statue of Æthelflæd, but the one that they had chosen instead of the one where you've got her with a spear in armor, it was her with a child by her side. She has got a sword, but it's sort of incidental. So, again, what we choose, being aware of it, finding some of those stories. So, the stories within significant individuals, there's a whole wealth that we could talk about there. But also within the mainstream history, the main periods that we're doing, to look to make sure that we are bringing in versions of not just exceptional women, but ordinary women's lives as well, in a way that is potentially more positive and doesn't presume that they are of no importance.
I think it's really important there, Carrie. And I think also I'm interested in the analysis that you made of the textbook, which we're not mentioning, but essentially, I think there's no, it's a really useful to get children to do that as well,
That's
because
what I'm
they're,
intending to do,
yeah,
Paul.
the
Yeah,
experience. Because I mean,
absolutely.
it's one thing to try and give, shall we say, a breadth of balance in what we're teaching to show diversity, But the world out there actually is, they're going to encounter, is going to be biased in many respects. Yeah. So we've got to give them the skills to understand that when they see it. So again, getting them to critique the books and the resources they've got, whether it's a website or a book or what have you, is really an important skill in its own right.
It's not just the number of images, it's also what the images portray.
The framing, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Definitely. You know, so the women are generally, if they're with men, they're generally in a subordinate role. Mm. The men are more assertive, the men are more active, the men are more powerful. So, you know, and as you say, it's opening children's eyes to this. And I think the same is becoming true for the LGBT Q plus history, that things are beginning to move, where people are saying, you know, maybe 10 years ago or so, I had a student who said, oh, I think I'd quite like to do some teaching in school around LGBT history week. And I said to him, do you know, I think that might be a step too far for a number of primary schools. But why don't you look at this person? And it was Alan Turin. So why don't you go away and find out about this person? He might be an interesting, significant individual to look at. In fact, I think it's probably longer than 10 years. It's probably about 15 years ago. And he came back and said, he was really interesting. Oh, he was gay as well. I said, yeah, he was. But he's interesting in his own right, not just because he's gay. Mm. And I think that's important, is that we're bringing people in who have historical significance in themselves. But what it requires, again, is for us to find out about people like Lily Parr, the footballer, like Anne Lister, the diarist, like Miranda James Barry, who, and there's a one for potentially for the trans community, where she lives her whole life dressed as a man, as a male army officer, a surgeon in the army. You know, so there are stories that we can tell. We just have to select them a little carefully. And we do have to be aware that this could cause backlash with families within where we are. You know, I did some and it's a thing on picture books in a school a long while ago, a CPD picture book series, and we showed them all these things. I said, oh, these are great, but we couldn't use half of these with our parents because they've got a lot of black children in there, and they're not going to want to know these stories. And we were like, no, this is why you should be using them with your children in school. You should be beginning to bring some new ideas in a gentle way. But we do need to be aware that some of these issues can be ones which will cause trouble within perhaps the community of the school. And therefore, that's why they're controversial issues. And that's why we need to have a certain sensitivity and think about how we might bring them, potentially hitting people over the head in a way that will cause problems, but will nevertheless move on to examine some of these difficult issues.
One of the issues, I think, one of the ways that addresses it was going back there to what we're trying to do is give good, appropriate history.
Yeah.
And it's not actually the purpose, whatever people, whatever your sentiments are in terms of the values, in terms of whether it's racism, challenging, or what have you. Essentially, it's trying to understand the past. So it's actually, it's not actually using the past
to
make the point. It's actually to understand the past more effectively by addressing these things. And that's a powerful way of actually addressing that issue, but also, again, getting good history.
I mean, I think there are implications for teachers in terms of, clarity of purpose in terms of why you're doing something, why you're including somebody and things like that. I mean, the point about textbooks is it's there in the curriculum. The curriculum requires that students understand historical interpretations and historical significance. What you're both talking about there in terms of textbooks is textbooks are constructions. So in one sense, they are historical interpretations and they are an exercise in historical, attributing historical significance. So what we can ask is how and why the author is doing what they're actually doing. I think that's really
absolutely
important.
Absolutely. And we can do this from a very early point as well, Jason, because we can with our picture books. I have four picture books on Mary Anning and three on Grace O'Malley. So there are three versions of her story, and looking at how has she been drawn? What colour is her hair? Does she meet Elizabeth or does she not meet Elizabeth? Mm. What words are used about her? They're ones that we can begin to pick away if we use these multiple picture books with children, that will begin to lay the foundations for understanding historical interpretation.
Exactly. And I guess, equally, again, it would be true of secondary teachers as well. I think if you are unsure, but you do need to actually talk to colleagues within your school, especially senior teachers, about your intentions and what your purposes behind those intentions actually are. I think there are implications here for you as a teacher to read widely around your topic. So yes, there's the picture book that might be used as a resource for the primary children. But I think your role as a teacher is to read a little bit beyond, like you were saying about the Turing case. What makes Turing historically significant? It's not simply his sexuality. And actually having clarity about that, because you've read widely, means that you're better able to get SLT on board. And then if there is noises off, then actually maybe you're in a better position to protect yourself in relation to that, because you've got a very clear historical rationale for doing something.
Absolutely. Absolutely.